It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
This week, I spoke to James Shaw about School Strike for Climate and the organisers' call for adults to take part in the next strike and that the government should declare a climate emergency. We also discussed Youth Parliament, which happened last week. And finally, James explained the reaction to the government, including the agricultural sector and the emissions trading scheme. I began by asking what his thoughts were on adults being included in School Strike for Climate.
Well, I've said this before, that I think that the school strike movement is really significant because, you know, for the first time, in, as far as I can remember, you've got a situation where people aren't voting, aren't striking for something that's about their material well-being, you know, like incomes or student fees or anything like that, but are essentially saying to the adults of today, look, you've failed in your duty of care over our future. I think it's an extraordinary moment, and I think that I've always sort of supported the people who have made the decision to walk out of their classrooms to go and do that, because, you know, far be it from me or frankly any other older person to say that they don't have a right to do that. So I think that's great, I think calling on adults to join them, if I was in their shoes, that's a good tactic.
The organisers of the event have also been looking for the government to declare a climate emergency, and I know there's sort of been consideration of this, but what are your sort of thoughts about the likelihood of that happening?
Well, we're getting advice on it, so we're just kind of trying to work through what the implications of that might be. We actually did have an attempt in Parliament about a month ago. Chloe Swarbrick put up a parliamentary motion which was blocked by National. And the PM and I have always said we actually think a parliamentary motion is actually the more powerful, right, because it's the Parliament of New Zealand, not just the government, saying, we think that this does constitute something at the level of an emergency. To have a government motion, I think, would be a bit of a fallback.
I don't know whether you did say that you're sort of looking at what the implications of it would be, but what, say, declaring anything an emergency, what does that actually mean exactly, other than saying this is an emergency?
Yeah, so that's actually part of the issue, right, is that we actually have a legal definition for a state of emergency, which is comes under our civil defence and emergency legislation. And the issue, this doesn't kind of work that way, because a civil defence emergency involves, for example, the suspension of some civil liberties in order to deal with a very immediate crisis. And actually, what we want to do here is to protect civil liberties and to ensure kind of a democratic response to climate change over a sustained period of time. So, we're just trying to work out, like, how do you do this in a way that doesn't confuse things and does actually, you know, that is actually useful. One of the criticisms of declarations of climate emergency is if they're not backed up by any kind of plan to do anything about it, then they really are just kind of hollow statements. And neither the PM nor I have got any interest in that.
Yeah, that's understandable. I can imagine that's very difficult, because it is a different emergency to any other emergency that you would be using that legislation for, which isn't,
right.
Yeah.
But it's a contextual emergency. I mean, this is the thing I keep saying, like, the reason I believe that it is an emergency is because it creates a string of other civil defence emergencies, right? It actually causes increasingly frequent and severe,
absolutely,
you know, fires and droughts and floods and storms. It's, you know, causing coastal erosion and houses to fall into the sea. I mean, those things, the symptoms of climate change are emergencies. So why wouldn't you refer to the cause also as an emergency? But in a sort of a structural sense, it's different from a civil defence emergency, and we're not going to go down the route of calling it a civil defence emergency, because that would basically put us into a permanent nationwide state, which, as I said, involves some pretty drastic measures. And actually, we're more interested in protecting and ensuring people's rights during the transition. So, like I say, we're
very difficult topic
to sort out. We'll see where we get to on it.
So let's. I just wanted to talk a little bit as well about youth parliament. There was a lot of stuff on social media about young people in parliament last week. Would you be able to talk us through what happens with youth parliament? When did it start, and why is it important?
Yeah, so the youth parliament started in I think 1996, and it's kind of grown and evolved since then. And it occurs during a long recess when the actual members of parliament are, you know, generally not in the house. And so what happens is every member of parliament selects a young person to essentially act in their stead, to be the, you know, the MP for Wellington Central or Auckland Central or whatever. And then there's a sort of a two-day kind of parliamentary simulation that occurs. So the youth parliamentarians go to the house, they debate a bill. They questioned ministers at question time, and I was one of those ministers who went along to question time and got grilled, both on climate change but also on finance, because I was the acting Minister of Finance while Grant was out of the country. And they do select committees, and they have to front up the media and all those kinds of things. And whilst all that's happening, Trevor Mallard, who's the Speaker of the House, he actually kind of takes responsibility for ensuring that the whole thing happens. It's broadcast on Parliament TV. You know, they have the resources of the Office of the Clerk and so on. So it's a pretty amazing event for those young people that are involved. Yeah, that's right. It's you know, I think a lot of people, young people, have participated in model United Nations type events. This is sort of that on steroids, if you like.
And why do you think it's important to have this time for young people to be involved in Parliament and to question MPs in question time and get involved with the inner workings of Parliament?
I think it has a couple of results. So one obviously is for those 120 young people who are those youth parliamentarians, it is a pretty intensive 2 to 3 day leadership development opportunity. And I know... Thankfully, not many of them actually go on to become actual parliamentarians later on in life. They find more sensible things to do with themselves. But it is interesting when you kind of see who is leading, you know, non-government organisations and charities and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Actually, many of them went through that experience. So I think it's an incredible kind of civic leadership program. The other thing is that I actually think it's great for MPs to be directly exposed for, you know, a kind of a sustained period of time, what the inner workings are of today's teenagers. And it is, because we have so few young people in Parliament, it develops a sort of a bias towards the kind of thinking that people develop later in life. And you lose some of the clarity with which young people kind of see the world and what their priorities are. And it's interesting, for example, that the Youth Parliament did declare a climate emergency right across Parliament. And you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm for that. And the bill that they were debating was a climate change-related bill. And even those who opposed the bill were speaking strongly in favour of climate action. They just didn't think that the bill, as it stood, really did the job. So, I think it's effective not just for those young people, but also for today's MPs as well.
I understand that the majority of people in Youth Parliament are high schoolers. Is that correct?
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
So a lot of them won't necessarily be of voting age either. So is that sort of interesting to see that people that are, you know, not even able to sort of vote on the issues that can vote on when you turn 18 have an opinion about it when they're younger as well?
Yeah.
And I think that must be a really interesting thing to look at as well.
Yeah, so previous parliaments, I think the previous youth parliament debated whether we should lower the voting age. And I think if you look at the performance of those young people last week in the House, you know, there was quite a good argument that that actually age is certainly no barrier to really effective political discourse.
Absolutely. So just finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about agriculture and being put into the emissions trading scheme. Could you tell me a little bit about how this decision has gone down? Do you think it's been met with mainly positive reactions or not so much?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's pretty unsatisfying to everyone, but it is progress. And so I think that the majority of media and feedback that I've had is, you know, after 30 years of arguing about it, finally, we are actually putting a price on emissions from the agricultural sector, and that is a good thing. And I think, you know, although the people who are saying that generally are also saying, look, the measure that we've got is pretty weak, and frankly it is. It's just a start. It's going to have to crank up over time. But I think people are relieved that we're finally getting serious about it. And the big breakthrough really is that the agricultural sector itself said, yes, actually, look, you know, having a price on emissions is part of the solution to bringing down emissions from climate change. And so that was ultimately the breakthrough.
Yeah, that's a really positive step, because I suppose with the agriculture sector admitting that, then that sort of changes the way some people who potentially disagree with the decision may think about it in the future. If they're thinking, oh, okay, the agriculture sector's accepted it, then maybe I should too.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, pretty much everyone outside of the agricultural sector has accepted this for a long time.
Oh no, I know. I mean those people that aren't working in the agricultural sector, that are voting for it, or you know, just the general public that agree or disagree with that decision.
Yeah, I think it has been. Yes, you're right. I think it has been at best confusing for the general public. About, you know, like, you know, who's right and who's wrong and what are the facts and, you know, what would be the impacts if they did come in or didn't come in and so on. And so I think the level of consensus, and it's thin. I'll admit that there's still quite a lot of resistance to the notion, and there's a lot of conditions that people have put on it and all that kind of stuff. But actually the consensus that we have reached has sent quite a strong signal to the broader public that actually we are all pulling in the same direction, and we are making progress. And that is really significant.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.